Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Wednesday, May 8, 2024. A senior South Sudanese diplomat was kicked out of his apartment in Italy.
What's interesting? Two diplomats before the guy wounded have been, they had to choose to return back to South Sudan. And from everywhere, they are going back because they cannot afford to stay and pay their rent.
And a senior church leader in Western Equatorial State is asking President Salva Kiir to declare a state of emergency in Tombora County.
And if they are not the one, then who's shooting and running within the areas which they control? To me, it is a failure of a government where your citizens are being killed and you don't know who's killing them.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Seven religious leaders from Western Equatorial State have written to President Salva Kiir asking him to declare a state of emergency in Tombora County following sustained ethnic violence in the area. The Bishop of Yambio Tombora Diocese, Eduardo Hiboro Kusala, says all religious leaders and institutions should be respected by men and women in uniform across the county.
We have felt that is necessary because the situation there is not easy to manage. There are a lot of guns in the hands of people who are not entitled to them. And in such a situation, even when we make efforts for peace, conversation, trying to engage communities, they don't come forward to tell us the truth. People are scared. People are afraid. And then those who hold the guns use them as they want. They can shoot anything. They can destroy communities and make people suffer. So I think principally the president has to come up and take the responsibility for Tombora and put it in the right direction.
The other question that people are asking is, where is Father Luca Yugwe?
That is my question, not people asking, really. That is my question. Because my priests had been assigned to Nigeria, and he was on his way from Nigeria to Tombora. We missed to reach him. We didn't get him until now. And we are asking the authority and the people in the area, where is my priest? And it's now going to 13, 14 days. We have not heard anything of him. And nobody has come to tell me somebody's holding him and they need this from me, or they've seen him dead and the body is found here. And there is a total silence, and I'm really very annoyed and very upset with my government, which is the first in order to provide protection for the people.
Have you made your concerns, your frustrations, your anger to the governor?
He has my letter and also efforts to messages to him through different ways. And I've been trying to meet him on this regard. I've not been able to meet him face to face. My concern is the president. I'm really focusing only on the president, because he is the one who is in charge of the country. And if he's appointing people, he should know who takes care of the people. And in a situation such as this, I need to see him very much active to make sure that no life is useless. Every human life counts.
Talking about caring for citizens, I am reliably informed that a lot of people who have lost hope in the National Army to protect them have camped in church compounds or in a church compound in Tombora County. Others have gone to the compounds of the UN mission in South Sudan. Could you bring us up to speed on the situation of these people? Who is feeding them? Where do they get their food from?
John, this is a very desperate situation. You know, this is just the beginning of the rainy season here. So with this conflict, everybody, people have left their homes. They are here in the parishes in Tombra, and then in the UN compound and the women's center. And these people cannot leave their compound to go anywhere to get any food. And so the little food that people try to get to them is not enough. Actually, people are starving. Even the level of diseases and sicknesses all rising up. And I don't even hear that the government has organized a support for these people. And those are the people who make you great, because there is a working force and there is a human potential within your nation. So it's an upsetting thing.
Do you know who is behind this? I'm sure. I mean, you just told me that Father Luke disappeared in a territory under IO. But what about the other villages where people are fleeing? Who is chasing them?
Now, John, if even asking this question itself, really, for me, it's not proper, because we are in a country, and a country with a leadership, which must know how this country is, or I mean the citizens, how they stay. And if we have the IO there, where are they operating? Where are their camps? And if they are not the one, then who is shooting and running within the areas which they control? To me, it is a failure of a government where your citizens are being killed and you don't know who's killing them. It means there's no government in that area. And that's why I'm addressing my question to President Salva Kiir, that Tombra, if it belongs to the Republic of South Sudan, then it needs a state of emergency so that it can establish and know who's the one killing his citizens.
That's Bishop Eduardo Hiboro Kusara, the Bishop of Yambio Tombora Diocese. He spoke to me from Yambio this past hour via WhatsApp. A senior South Sudanese diplomat in Rome was kicked out of his apartment for failing to pay his rent for 6 months. Gailel Ngundeng was caught on camera, visibly sobbing on a street in Rome as he stood next to his suitcase. I spoke to Ambassador Akech Koch, former South Sudanese ambassador to the United States, to explain what is happening at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs.
The diplomats are in a very serious condition. It is very unfortunate, and I really empathize with the diplomat Glenn in Italy, who is seen crying. He has been evicted from his residence because of lack of payment. And the government in Juba is sending diplomats worldwide without sending them the means for living and supporting their work. So it is not only in Italy, but it is in so many places. And it is very unfortunate, because when a government gives you duty to do, it has also obligations towards you to serve those interests. Two diplomats before Guy Wunden had to choose to return back to South Sudan. And from everywhere, they are going back because they cannot afford to stay and pay their rent without receiving their salaries for over 8 months.
Talk to me about your experience when you were the South Sudanese ambassador here in the United States. How was it compared to today?
We were getting our salaries on time. Until I left, there was not a single month of delay in the salaries. Fortunately, we also had the money which we generated at the embassy, because there were many people traveling to South Sudan, and there were many people authenticating their documents for work in South Sudan. So we were getting a lot of money, and it was being transferred to South Sudan through the Ministry of Finance. But if we were short of something, the ministry could allow us to use the money and deduct it from whatever would be sent to us. So nobody cares about what is being done for South Sudan. People care about themselves only, those who are in power, whether in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs or in other institutions.
Yeah, let's look at the South Sudan's Foreign Service. I'm talking about the Ministry of
foreign affairs and international cooperation. Most people are saying that they have failed to understand how someone can stay for 40 months without being paid. And this person is in a foreign land where you have bills, you pay your rent, you pay water, you pay electricity. How, why would you subject yourself to that situation as opposed to, you know, calling it quit?
Many people have called it quit and have returned home. But unfortunately, there is a selective difference in sending money to missions abroad.
So what do you mean there is a selective approach to sending money to missions abroad? Are you saying some missions are favored and others are not?
Precisely. That's what I'm saying.
And which missions are favored? Why would they be favored?
Depending,
you're making a very strong statement here, Ambassador.
It is, yes, and I stand by what I say. There are some embassies where the heads of missions get, or the missions themselves get support. Once the head of mission writes, something is approved and sent to him or her. Whereas in other missions, whether you write, whether you come back and claim for what you are threatened, you don't go back to your station, then you are made to rot in Juba. So
let's take the case of diplomat Lel Guy Ngundeng. When I looked at the picture and it went viral on social media and everybody's commenting that why is he even there? If you have not been paid for 6 months, what are you doing in Italy? Would you do that if you were put in his place?
Two of his colleagues have done so. Two of his colleagues have gone back to Juba, and he's the third person now confronted with not being able to pay. The other two, since they were evicted, then they have had to arrange on their own, not even being sent tickets to go back. And I'm sure they will not be paid. They will not be refunded for the tickets they have used for going back to their missions, for going back to the capital, South Sudan.
The Minister of Foreign Affairs, Ramadan Abdallah Gooch, is not on this call, and you are already making an assumption that those who buy tickets to return home will not get any refunds. You're no longer at the ministry. Things must have changed. Why would you predict that they will not be paid?
Brother John, during my time when I was at the embassy in D.C., whenever you had to go home on an official request, or due to some reasonable facts, then you were immediately refunded the cost of your ticket. But these days, even for you to ask for leave, you are made to pay for your own ticket to and fro from wherever destination you are coming, you are going from, to Juba and back.
That's retired Ambassador Akech Koch, former South Sudanese ambassador to the United States. He spoke with me from New York earlier today. This program made several calls to South Sudan's Minister of Foreign Affairs, Ramadan Abdallah Gooch, for comments on the situation in Italy, but he did not return our calls. Some veterans of Sudan's civil war, rather, say they are living under tough conditions. The fighters who started a rebellion in 1955 say the current government in South Sudan has not recognized their efforts. South Sudan's military spokesperson says the government is working on retirement package for the country's veterans. For VOA News, Manyang, David Mayar reports from Juba.
89-year-old Joseph Aruna, who is a Nyanya One veteran, says his sacrifices during the struggle for the independence of South Sudan has never been recognized.
I am living a tough life and I'm suffering. I have no house, I don't have food, I only eat bread at a time. If really there are members of our Nyanya One in the government, I wouldn't be suffering like this. I would be eating well until God take my life.
On August 18, 1955, a group of officers at a garrison in the town of Taurid in eastern Equatorial State rebelled against the Sudanese government in Khartoum. The group fought a bitter civil war, which ended with the signing of the peace agreement in 1972. Haruna says his decision to fight the Sudan government for 17 years helped lay a foundation for the Second Sudanese Civil War in 1983. He says if he were to meet President Salva Kiir, he will bring the following issues to the president's attention.
Number one, we need peace. Number two, we need our children to study for free. Number three, I want a tractor for me to start farming. And something for my transport, a Land Cruiser vehicle. Is it true that our president will not look into the challenges we are facing?
60 surviving former soldiers of Anyanya 1 met last week to discuss the plethora of issues affecting them. 72-year-old David Odwar, one of the former Anyanya fighters, says South Sudan's veterans need and deserve the support of the government.
Most of us are now elderly people. We feel that time has come for us to come together to form this body called Anyanya One Foundation. So this body will now stand firm for us, to support us, to look for the rights of the people who fought during the movement. They cannot be just left like that and die out just like that.
Benedict Lagu, who is a son to the former Anyanya One leader, Joseph Lagu, says the transitional government has no plan for rewarding war veterans, including his father.
The government is doing very little for Joseph Lagu. As a former leader, and as a former president, I felt that there was a lot needed to be done for retired soldiers who feel they have been neglected, who feel their efforts were not recognized. And sometimes it is very shameful when you see former veterans in a very bad mood, cannot afford transport, cannot pay for their medical bills. These were the people who gave their youth for the liberation of this country. At least we need to support them.
Major General Lou Raikong, a spokesperson for the South Sudan's People's Defense Forces, says efforts are underway to pay the former soldiers' pensions.
No one has been forgotten by the government, starting with Anyanya One and other veterans of the War of Liberation. Secondly, the government is still working on operationalization of pension funds through Pension Act. Once that is finalized, everyone who has served will get his or her dues.
The head of the Specialized Committee for Defense and Veteran Affairs at the National Legislative Assembly said more than 64,000 soldiers are on the country's retirement list. The government of South Sudan says they plan to pay soldiers' retirement benefits, but the 2013 conflict and the current hyperinflation in the country has diverted the attention of leaders who are addressing other pressing issues. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayer in Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, various South Sudanese stakeholders are meeting in Nairobi. Find out why after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Our words of wisdom for today comes from Warab State.
Hello, BOA. This is Mayor Angelo Deng from Toj North Payamp of Gokriat East County, presenting a proverb from Jiang Soil. The proverb is Ayach en kul fier. Its English translation is, it is the stomach which throws the leg. It means you can't do any work that requires application of pulse without having eaten. Thanks.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Consultations began in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, today in preparation for peace talks between South Sudan's government and the coalition known as the South Sudan Opposition Alliance. Rajab Mohandis is a civil society activist and a member of a group called People's Coalition for Civil Action. He is currently in Nairobi at the talks and spoke with my colleague Nabil Biajo.
We have come to explore the ongoing high-level mediation for South Sudan. The process that President Salva Kiir requested his counterpart, President William Ruto, to mediate peace between the government and the South Sudan Opposition Alliance. As the People's Coalition for Civil Action, we picked interest to explore this process, to understand what it has for the people of South Sudan, and we have always advocated for dialogue and non-violent means of resolving the crisis in the country. The statement from the chief mediator, General Lazarus Simbayo, said they will have the program will be, the initiative will be formally launched tomorrow, and then thereafter the negotiations will begin. So that's the status for now.
This is a process to bring in or bring on board parties, armed groups that are outside the 2018 peace agreement and outside the current government in Juba ahead of elections in December. And you got invited, as I understand, as civil society, is that correct?
Yes, we got invitation to participate as civil society, and we understand from our perspective of the situation in South Sudan, the current state of affairs is much greater than what you have just stated of getting the parties that are not in the peace agreement into the peace agreement and to hold elections. We are aware that the agreement, the implementation of the agreement has stalled long ago, and that the possibility of holding elections by December this year are extremely remote. And therefore, our belief is that such a process should be used to address these broad issues that the country is facing, including why the agreement that has been signed or the agreements that have been signed over the years have not been really implemented to deliver peace in the country. We believe that it is much more than just getting another agreement on top of the agreements that are already there, but that this process, our understanding is that it should focus really on the critical issues that are affecting the country at the moment.
What role as civil society do you play here?
We intend to contribute to the substance of the negotiations, and of course bring our perspectives of the situation in the country as it stands now, and what we think is necessary that should be done to help in terms of bringing peace to South Sudan, lasting peace, and a process that would deliver that peace. At the moment, we think that is more important.
You are part of a group, the People's Coalition for Civil Action, a group that I think we can say for all intents and purposes is banned in South Sudan right now. You and your colleagues had to leave the country because it was not safe for you to stay in South Sudan. And some of you who stayed behind, they got jailed and prosecuted. Is this also a way for you to get back participating in this forum?
Well, yeah, of course, we do not take our case as a priority in this case. We are aware that we got pushed out of the country against our will, and of course in violation of our constitutional rights as citizens. But we do not think that is the priority for us to and for this mediation. But obviously, what matters, we believe, is the broader issue of also South Sudanese engaging among themselves to talk to them among themselves about the crisis in the country and how they resolve that. We know that the issue of political and civic spaces are kind of a critical issue for the country because such conversations should have happened on the South Sudanese soil. And it is not difficult for us as South Sudanese to dialogue among ourselves. And that was exactly what we intended to do as the PCCA. Raise concerns that there is a problem in the country and these problems need to be addressed.
That's Rajab Mohandis, a member of a group calling itself the People's Coalition for Civil Action. He spoke with my colleague Nabil Biagio from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, this past hour. From Nairobi, we move to the United States, where the U.S. presidential campaign candidates Joe Biden and Donald Trump are both using artificial intelligence to attract voters. VOA correspondent Scott Stans reports on machine learning in the U.S. elections.
For political campaigns looking to best target the most voters most economically, generative artificial intelligence is the biggest change in politics. Scott Babwa Brennan watches online misinformation and political advertising at the University of North Carolina.
The models are getting better very rapidly. It feels like every week there's some new model which is significantly better than a previous model.
Those models are powerful tools for campaigns at the national level and at the local level, says political strategist Betsy Hoover.
Think about the campaign that does not have digital staff at all, and therefore really doesn't have a digital content program. Like, generative AI allows them to have one, and a pretty robust one if they want to. Or think about a candidate who's running against a well-funded incumbent. AI has a huge role to play in that campaign.
Hoover's firm invests in developing technology for Democratic Party and left-leaning causes. She says the key to machine learning in politics is, quote, doing it the right way.
I don't really know exactly what every Republican campaign would say their standards are, but I do know that Democrats have a high standard for how we're going to use this new technology. And so I'm not really worried about falling behind if it is not ethical and responsible use of AI.
In 2016, the Trump campaign used unprecedented social media advertising with hyper-personalized messages, working with the British data mining firm Cambridge Analytica to directly target individual voters in swing states. Brad Parsale was that campaign's senior advisor for data and digital operations. His firm Campaign Nucleus powers the 2024 Trump website. Parsale told a conservative Freedom Fest conference earlier this year that artificial intelligence can analyze voter data to create mass personalized text and email ads and deploy paid workers to pick up absentee ballots.
In a couple of years, you're going to be able to have this running for office on your cell phone, an AI-driven press release machine, write your campaign emails, fundraising tech, everything right on your cell phone, all built for you.
It's not just the campaigns. Polling by the American Press Institute and the Associated Press show 42% of American voters worry that news outlets will use generative artificial intelligence to create stories during this campaign. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
That's all we prepared for you on this Wednesday, May 8, 2024. We now leave you with some actually traditional song. This one is called La Bena. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Patrick Deya, we thank you for tuning in. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.